Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. China has dramatically increased its economic influence in Latin America. The United States is still the region's largest investor, but China is now in second place and gaining a larger market share. In 2009, for example, China loaned a Brazilian oil company $10 billion, and it built a cell phone factory in Venezuela. The next year, China signed a $10 billion deal for the construction of railroads in Argentina. And in March, Ecuador agreed to auction off one-third of the country's Amazonian rainforest to Chinese oil companies. But all these deals pale in comparison to a project in Nicaragua. A Hong Kong company wants to spend at least $40 billion to build a canal across Nicaragua to connect the Pacific with the Caribbean Sea. It would be wider and five times longer than the Panama Canal. Nicaragua's legislature gave the company the rights to build a waterway and connecting ports. The canal would be a giant boost for Nicaragua's economy, but would also likely pollute Lake Nicaragua, a vital source of drinking water. On today's program, we'll examine the economic and geopolitical implications of this surge in Chinese investments and trade in Latin America. But first, World Watch with Raymond Tungekar.
Former South African president and anti-apartheid leader Nelson Mandela died today. The country's current president, Jacob Zuma, announced the news in a televised speech, saying, quote, "Our nation has lost its greatest son." Mandela led the nation's transition from white minority rule in the 90s. He was 95. In Ukraine, hundreds of thousands of protesters gathered in Kiev to oppose President Viktor Yanukovych's decision to forgo a deal that would bring the country closer with the European Union. Pro-Europe demonstrators have occupied a central square in Kiev since Sunday after erecting barricades to keep police away. Today, a senior American official urged protest leaders to find a solution that would effectively keep President Yanukovych in power. Fighting erupted today in the capital of the Central African Republic, just mere hours before the UN Security Council approved a peacekeeping force made up of French and African troops. France's foreign minister said that about 1,200 French troops would be deployed to the country, which has been governed by a mostly Muslim rebel coalition since March. Earlier this morning, anti-government forces, mostly made up of Christian fighters, reportedly attacked a military camp and a neighborhood around an airport. The fighting in the capital is the heaviest seen in months. At least 60 people are reported dead. And that's it for this week's World Watch.
As the United States has been preoccupied with Iraq, Afghanistan, and now is making a pivot to Asia, China is getting a larger foothold in what Secretary of State John Kerry calls America's backyard. Joining us to talk about China's influence in Nicaragua and the rest of Latin America are Tim Rogers, he's the editor of Nicaragua Dispatch, and Margaret Myers, the China and Latin America Program Director at Inter-American Dialogue. Also with us is Benjamin Creutzfeldt, a professor in contemporary China studies at CESA, a business school in Bogota, Colombia. Welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you.
Tim, the headline of your analysis on the Nicaragua Canal Project is a question, bonanza or boondoggle? Let's start with the rosy scenario portrayed by the Sandinista government and the Chinese investment company.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the program. I'll try and outline this in very broad strokes, which is basically all the information we have anyway. They are saying that this will be a $40 billion project. That number doesn't appear to be based on any hard math. No one's sort of shown any line item calculations for that number. So that's the starting point. They don't know what the route of the canal would be. They're currently studying about six different possible routes. In the next month, in December, the Chinese company that was granted a 50-year concession to build, manage, and operate and own the canal will announce, supposedly, the route and where some of the money is coming from. the investors that are backing this project. But it's a project that's on a massive scale, never before seen in Central America or in Latin America, really. You said that this canal will be wider and deeper than the Panama Canal. It'll also be a lot longer than the Panama Canal. Mm-hmm. And it's a canal that's being built to allow this new generation of super tankers to come through. They're called Triple-E super tankers that are too big to even fit through the expanded Panama Canal project. So this is a really massive project, and despite the massive size of this project, they're saying that it will start construction next year and be built by 2019. So the optimistic calculation is that Nicaragua will have ships passing through it by December 2019.
Okay. And Margaret, so your group tracks the major Chinese investments in Latin America countries. What is your gut feeling about this project?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand that this project really stands out from a lot of the others. First of all, because it isn't clearly a Chinese-backed project. It's not there. China has really sort of, the Chinese government has really separated itself quite considerably from the project. It doesn't mention any sort of affiliation. And what you see is one man, a Chinese billionaire who works in telecommunications, among other things, mm-hmm. his name is Wang Jing, really kind of financing many of the initial stages of this project, including initial parts of the feasibility study, which should be done more or less in about half a year. Is that correct, Tim? Mm-hmm. But in any case, it's not clearly a Chinese-backed endeavor, unlike a lot of the other investments that you happened to mention at the beginning of the segment. And so what will be interesting, as Tim mentioned, is in the next month seeing who is planning to invest in this project, whether it's, a wide range of sort of global investors, be they, private entrepreneurs or companies, we don't really know, or whether actually there will be some Chinese involvement, perhaps on the part of China's major financial institutions like China Development Bank or others. And that would be something that I think the U.S. would pay a lot of attention to, and also plenty of people in Latin America as well.
And how many, Margaret, about how many super tankers are there in maritime demand? Let's get a kind of scope of the number of these ships.
It's the number I've heard, and I you get different calculations about this, and I'm not entirely sure. It's about 2 to 3 total, right, existing in the world. So it's not as though there are tons and tons of these super tankers that need to be accommodated. In addition to that, when we're talking about a canal in Nicaragua, it's not going to be an easy endeavor to make this happen, no matter where the route is planned. There are lots of problems, for example, with hurricanes and earthquakes in Nicaragua that you don't encounter in Panama. It will be much longer, as we mentioned, and winds and all sorts of other sort of factors contribute to really difficulties in actually building the thing. So there are plenty of impediments.
Benjamin, do you have anything to add on this particular project?
Well, yes. I mean, it harks back to the first attempts, and there were many attempts before the Americans finally succeeded in building the Panama Canal, and still today in French you speak of Quel Panama, which means what a catastrophe when something really doesn't work, because Lesseps, the Frenchman, tried to get investment to build the canal in the 1880s, and it failed. What is interesting, perhaps, to mention is that this does have repercussions beyond just Nicaragua, mm-hmm. China, the U.S., and so on. Colombia and Nicaragua have had for many, many decades a dispute over maritime rights and two islands or several islands in the Caribbean, and the international court at The Hague ruled at the end of last year largely in favor of granting extensive maritime territories to Nicaragua, which Colombia was extremely upset about. There was a lot of noise. A former foreign minister of Colombia, Noemi Sanin, came forward and has been writing articles and is planning to publish a book, or is on the verge of publishing a book, accusing basically the Chinese government of being behind or having influenced in some way or other through a Chinese judge on the Hague court, having basically made it possible, made it feasible to technically give access to Nicaragua to maritime, to waters around the country that, that would make this canal possible. But that, that just shows again that it's something that is little known. The Chinese, as Margaret has said rightly, have there are documents that show the Chinese government has discouraged anyone in China from getting involved with Nicaragua on this front. So it's a lot of guesswork.
And Tim, could you talk about the environmental consequences that are possible with this project, since it does go across Lake Nicaragua?
Yeah, so the reason, one of the reasons Nicaragua has been so tempting, I think if you're just looking at a map of Central America, is it has this massive lake right in the middle, which would, which looks like it would shorten the distance between the two coasts. The problem with Lake Nicaragua, well, there's several problems. One of the issues is that it's almost like an open sea. You can get 10-foot waves on the lake. It's a massive lake, so it's not exactly smooth sailing. It's also it's very shallow. Most of the lake is shallow, and it runs over fault lines. So they would need to do some massive dredging of the lake. And what's been explained to me is that the lake, the silt in the lake is so fine that they would constantly need to be dredging just to keep it deep enough for these ships to go through. So this is another one of the questions that hasn't been answered about the canal. Is it even feasible to build this thing? And the other concern, the long-term concern, is that Nicaragua, this lake is viewed as the sort of the future source of drinking water, not only for Nicaragua, but for all of Central America. And so that there's concern that Nicaragua is going to poison the well with this thing.
Mm-hmm. And there have been other, obviously, other projects in Latin America that have gone sour as far as environmental consequences, particularly in Ecuador. Margaret, how does this fit in as far as comparison with other projects as far as the possible environmental consequences?
That's an excellent question. It's a difficult one to answer because so many of the deals that, that China has struck, be they, you know, major loan agreements or actual sort of investments on the part of state-owned enterprises or on the part of, you know, provincial-level firms or independent firms, have kind of yet to begin in many cases, especially those that would have major sort of environmental implications. And when we look at the case of Peru, there's a lot of mining activity going on there and a lot of planned mining activity on the part of Chinese firms. But really, there's only one example of mining actually getting off the ground and taking place, and that was the case of Shougang Hierro, which is a sort of notorious Chinese firm. It had some difficulties more with community relations than with environmental relations. Now everybody's keeping a close eye on another firm called Chinalco, which has moved an entire town in order to do open pit copper mining. And so they've done plenty. There are environmental assessments that take place before any of these deals sort of are struck, but they're not always to the same standards that, that you would encounter among sort of multinationals or Western institutions, if we want to call them that. So I think a lot of that sort of remains to be seen. In other cases, though, you do see the Chinese operating very much on par with their international counterparts. So it really, you have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. It's a bit of a mixed record, as is the case with other international firms.
And Margaret, you've lived and worked in China. What do Chinese leaders find appealing about Latin America as an investment opportunity? And are there particular countries they have a greater affinity for?
Sure, yeah, that's an excellent question. China's firms tend to go out based on what's called the going out strategy. They go out internationally, not just to Latin America, but globally. And what they're seeking is access really to more in the way of natural resources, which is what we hear quite a bit about in the media when we hear about these investments. They're also seeking opportunities to internationalize their major firms. So big agricultural firms, big mining firms, all sorts of other firms are going out to really understand how to operate in a global sort of situation. And then beyond that, they're seeking employment for a lot of their construction firms at major infrastructure projects, things along those lines. Some of the big state-owned enterprises in China have excess service teams that need to be employed, and going out is a good way to accomplish that. And then, of course, China also has huge reserves, right? Huge foreign reserves that need to be employed. And so a lot of this overseas investment activity is an attempt to do just that. Latin America is extremely attractive because it is so rich in natural resources. And when you look at South American countries, the major sort of commodities exporters, those tend to be the strongest partners in Latin America with China, just based on their resource allocation.
And Benjamin, could these economic investments mean increasing Chinese political power and influence in the region in general?
Well, the Chinese are very cautious to keep the political any political games aside. They have been building contacts with all parties in all countries as much as they can since the 1950s, essentially, and have delegations coming over both from the right and the left. And yet they don't want to place their bets specifically with any one. Mm-hmm. If anything, one could see they have a preference. As Margaret has said, depending on they allocate assets and become more active in countries that have greater resources that are of their interest, but also they find it easier to deal with certain countries. And Latin America is more interesting to them than Central Asia or Africa or the Middle East. It's just one more source of commodities that they need and will need more and more. So they tend to engage more with countries where they either have good cultural connections, like Peru, which has a huge Chinese population from immigration early in the 19th century, and countries like Venezuela and Ecuador, where they can deal with the government directly and kind of feel more comfortable dealing with the system, whereas other countries such as Colombia, they find much more tricky, and so they've sort of been stepping more cautiously there.
Right. You know. And Tim, could you talk about that, answer that question also? And as far as Nicaragua first, what this is going to mean for Nicaragua's power structure?
Sure. If it comes forward. What's curious and it's easy to lose sight of this is the fact that Nicaragua and China don't have diplomatic relations. And so that's what makes this whole arrangement so bizarre, because the two governments don't talk to one another, at least officially. Mm-hmm. So Central America as a block has been, is a backer of Taiwan. And Nicaragua still maintains very close relationships with Taiwan. They have about $47 million in loans from Taiwan right now, and just last month restructured their debt with Taiwan to get another $7 million in loans. So they maintain good relations with Taiwan. Costa Rica was the first country in Central America back in 2007 to sever official ties with Taiwan and opt for China. When they made this arrangement, there was sort of a flurry of promises that were made to Costa Rica by China as part of this courting. And China promised to build Costa Rica lots of infrastructure projects, highways, a $1.3 billion oil refinery. And as a sweetener, they offered to build a soccer stadium for Costa Rica. Of all the promises that China's made, the only one they've come through on was the soccer stadium, which they built several years ago. So there's already frustration in Costa Rica, which has official ties with China, that they're not delivering on what they promised. So to look at the situation in Nicaragua, which doesn't have official ties, which isn't talking to China, is dealing instead with this Chinese businessman who may or may not have ties with the Chinese government, may or may not be a proxy for the Chinese government or the Chinese military, we don't know. It just adds a whole nother layer of mystery and speculative doubts to the project. And
that's very interesting what you point out, Tim. Sorry, it's Benjamin here. That there are no official ties, and this is very much a situation that was the same in Panama when the United States government decided to essentially withdraw from the control of the Panama Canal, and Hutchison Whampoa moved in, which is again a Hong Kong company. Like Wang Jing is Hong Kong based, so and there was I remember reading a number of articles by I would say conservative think tanks in the United States who were extremely worried about Red China taking over control of the lifeline of American economy in Central America. So there is maybe still some echoes of that kind of feeling. But that also shows that it isn't impossible. And Hutchison Whampoa, Li Ka-shing, they do have ties with Beijing. So often these sort of proxy relations do mean something. It's quite an interesting aspect to it.
I want to talk about other forms of Chinese influence in the region. China is opening Confucius centers across Latin America and investing in media outlets. What impact might these exercises of soft power have, Margaret?
Yeah, I mean, I think the number right now, I could be wrong about this, is about 23 Confucius Institutes around the entire region. And usually what happens is they partner with universities and there's sort of a shared sort of funding arrangement. And, you know, the idea here, and you read a lot about this in Chinese sort of policy documents, is really to improve China's capacity or for soft power and its you know, sort of soft influence abroad. I think China has been making considerable progress in this effort, not only because of, you know, what it's doing in terms of media engagement and also these building of these Confucius centers, which teach language and culture, but also because there's considerable interest in Latin America now, increasingly so, in learning Chinese and learning more about China, because there's a real sense that there is tremendous opportunity with respect to China, that China is an important partner in the region. China, according to the Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean, which is part of the UN, was more important to the region's growth over the past few years than the United States was. So, you know, the idea is now to begin learning more about China, and a lot of that's coming from countries in the region and from people with their own sort of initiative. Okay. I know Benjamin, I believe, is there a Confucius Institute at you say so or no?
No, but there are two in Bogota now.
Right.
It does vary. Again, you were saying earlier, case by case, Margaret, and it's also country by country. I mean, Colombia is an example of a country relatively xenophobic. The relatively few foreign, particularly Asian foreigners here, and so having two or three Confucius Institutes doesn't really make much difference. Still, everybody wants to learn English, then German, then Italian, French, whatever. Chinese comes long down the list, and even if those that do start don't end up really going on for very long. There is a sort of certain idea that there may be some opportunities out there. But I think, again, if you look at somewhere like Ecuador or Peru, that's fascinating, where there have been government officials or former government officials who have actually embraced, speaking of Chinese soft power, who have embraced Chinese ideas. There's a recent book by possibly ghostwritten by Alan Garcia, the former president of Peru, called Confucius and Globalization. And it, you know, it speaks, he basically has completely bought into the idea of a Chinese more benevolent, more even-handed you know, partner in growth. And Ecuador, a minister recently, also was saying that Ecuador shared the Chinese dream. So certainly there is there have been successful efforts by the Chinese, and of course backed by the economic growth and loans and investment and so on, that have persuaded some people with a big voice in Latin American countries to sort of share this, to join this, to bet on this, on the Chinese dream, on Chinese expansion in the future.
So okay.
It seems to be working some places.
I want to get Tim and Tim's answer on this, but before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. This week, there are stories on Nicaragua's canal project and China's influence in Latin America. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You could also follow us on Twitter at @globaljourn. Tim, what's your experience with this idea of the Chinese soft power?
No, I don't. I mean, there's no real soft power in Central America. Central America doesn't carry much water in Central America anyway. We're sort of a hard power place.
Okay, and let's in the last round of answers, I like to talk about the impact of Chinese investments in Latin America on U.S. influence in the region. Even though China has dramatically increased its investments, it still pales in comparison to the amount of U.S. investments in the region. But Margaret, what's the impact of the United States on this trend?
You know, it really depends on who you talk to. When you talk to American businesses, there's a real sense that there is, in fact, some direct competition for certain contracts and for certain investment opportunities in the region. But generally speaking, as you mentioned, I mean, trade with Latin America, U.S. trade with Latin America has, in fact, increased over the past few years. And there is still considerable investment on the part of the U.S. in all sorts of different sectors in Latin America and across the region. It's not as narrowly focused as what you might find from China. The U.S. also tends to invest in a wider variety of sectors, some of which are considered to be sort of more strategic and promoting of longer-term growth, things like manufacturing industries and service sector and all sorts of other sort of higher-tech enterprises, whereas Chinese investment, by and large, and this is changing somewhat, but has focused quite a bit on the extractive sector and on infrastructure development, which is extremely important in Latin America as well. It's not quite as diverse at this point as what you see from the United States. As I mentioned, I'll very quickly say that this is kind of changing. And there was a recent report that came out by the China-Brazil Business Council, and this might be a Brazil-specific case, but that we see a lot more in the way of sort of greenfield investment on the part of Chinese firms and also investment in some of these manufacturing sectors, in research and development, in some areas which would be promoting of mm-hmm. growth and not just of, primary commodities development and export.
Okay, Tim, can you weigh in briefly on this?
Well, I mean, it's still speculative. The U.S. isn't, in terms of the canal in Nicaragua, the U.S. hasn't really weighed in yet because everyone's sort of waiting to see what the role of China is. And because there's so much doubt about who's behind this project, the U.S., I think, is playing it cautious right now. The U.S. and Nicaragua have very good economic relations. The United States is Nicaragua's number one trade partner.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a relationship that has continued to mature over the years, even with the Sandinistas back in power.
Okay.
So the U.S. right now is watching and waiting to see how this shakes out.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. It's been a fascinating conversation. Thanks you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Global Journalist is produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us today was Tim Rogers of Nicaragua Dispatch, Benjamin Creutzfeldt of CESA Business School, and Margaret Myers from Inter-American Dialogue. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. Victoria Mitzkete was this week's lead producer. Please join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.